This week on the Africa Innovation and Technology Podcast, we are talking about the fight against cybercrime in Africa. Hello, I am Paul Ndiho. Every week, we strive to bring you in-depth discussions that inspire, empower, engage, and motivate young emerging African entrepreneurs using new technology into action. Analysts say the fight against cybercrime requires a cohesive, coordinated approach because the potential for internet abuse in Africa is at all-time high.
According to the FBI, cybercrime has increased by over 400% since the coronavirus pandemic was declared over a year ago.
Joining me to talk about the fight against cybercrime are two cybersecurity analysts, Adedoyin Adedeje, a tech entrepreneur based in Lagos, Nigeria, and Nebiyu Telahun, a cybersecurity analyst based in Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, welcome to my podcast.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me today.
How are you guys?
We're doing good.
What is cybercrime, Nebiyu?
In order to define cybercrime, we're going to have to start by defining cybersecurity. And cybersecurity is a branch of IT that specifically deals with anything that involves in computer usage, mismanagement, or misusage of computer or communication equipment. Cyber security or information security crime is an infringement or an attack on the three pillars of IT branch that deals with specific confidentiality, data availability, as well as data integrity in or in transit between corporate and private networks.
A lot of people say that when it comes to cybercrime, Nigeria is the heart of cyber criminals. I don't know if that's true, but there are a lot of people who say that Nigeria has taken the trophy when it comes to a lot of people attempting to be cyber criminals.
I totally want to agree with the general notion that Nigeria is one of the biggest cyber crime countries. What I can agree to is that there is a high prevalence of cyber crime in Nigeria. And I think one of the key things about, one of the key reasons why we've had issues over the years, particularly with the international community, is the capacity of government and law enforcement to look into a number of cyber crime related issues. Because if you have to put on the ranking, probably Nigeria is not even on the top five. The reason why I say so is simply because most of the high profile cyber crime we have globally, hardly would you see Nigerians featuring on this list. You probably have Russians, you have Chinese, you have Americans, you have British. Okay, but then I think the difference between these countries and some of the crimes being committed in Nigeria is the law enforcement agencies in these countries go the extra mile to solve these cases and bring the perpetrators to book. Okay, but in Nigeria, we don't have the legal framework yet. Our legal framework is not yet strong enough when it comes to technology to deal with some of this crime. So most of the time, most of the cases that get solved are cases that probably involved probably the FBI or the Interpol to get it resolved within the country. So in those kind of cases, we get external support, external help from law enforcement outside the country to help solve some of these cases. But internally, most of the time, we don't have, like for example, particularly within the Nigerian Law Enforcement Agency, we don't have like a dedicated cyber security system. Majorly what we have is what we call the Economic Financial Crime Commission, which is majorly dealing with financial crime. And they have a hand that investigates cyber crime and all that. So, but then there's still a need for a bigger and more robust legislation and legal framework to deal with this. So I think that's probably one of the areas where I would say Nigeria seems to not be doing enough when it comes to curbing cybercrime in the country.
Why has there been a surge of cybercrime, at least this last year, when a lot of people, I think, are at home? There seems to be a surge in cyber-related crimes. When we talk about cybercrime, an increase in cybercrime, what do we mean exactly?
The crime level in general, the cybersecurity threat coming from, not necessarily just only Nigeria, but in general in African countries, you'll see that the biggest challenge most African countries have is around the legal framework. It's not up to scratch. If you look at the standards that are implemented on most Western countries, like the PCI DSS and ISO 27001, these are the legal frameworks that are available for computer usage and dealing with cybercrime. And a lot of countries in Africa do not have this kind of framework implemented in their own law enforcement infrastructure. To give you an example, Nigeria is actually one of the very small number of countries that implement or at least have some kind of law enacted to deal with cybercrime. It's only 11 African countries in general. About 30 countries out of 52 do not have any law that governs cybersecurity. A lot of attacks happen in a lot of African countries, which obviously use, you know, computer networks, but a lot of countries in Africa don't report it or at least take it seriously enough to deal with cybercrime in general. So I'm not surprised that the vast majority of, I think it's estimated 4 out of 10 high crime perpetrating countries in the world, 4 of them are in Africa. And it just tells you the level of issues. It's not just the technology that we need to deal with, but also taking it seriously in terms of how to deal with it through law enforcement method. And we don't have that in general in Africa.
Okay. You talked about the lack of a legal framework. That's what's leading to a lot of these cyber crimes. But take, for example, here in the United States, in Europe, and all these Western countries, they've in a way come up with a legal framework. Here in the United States, the FBI is aggressively trying to track down these people who are committing these crimes. Mm-hmm. But that has not stopped cyber criminals from attempting to disrupt the government networks, the government system, the financial industry.
Mm-hmm. No matter the level of law enforcement you put in place, there would always be criminals. That's one thing you have to understand. But then what makes your system work is the sense for justice. If there's justice, if people know that, I've watched, I think that was the time I was watching this FBI series, the FBI Files. And one of the things I learned is that even if you commit a crime 10, 20 years down the line, they will still continue to find it. They have cases they call cold cases. So even if it's 5 or 10 years down the line, 15 years down the line, they will still continue to find answers until they're able to pinpoint who exactly did this crime. Okay, so it's that sense of justice that makes a whole lot of difference, because you know that one way or the other, someday, whether now or in future, the law will definitely always meet up with you. Okay, but then if people commit crime and they are very sure they will get away with the crime, then it gives them the audacity to commit more crime. But then we've seen a whole lot of people. Now, take for example, a lot of the hackers or probably cyber criminals that have been caught by the FBI that were eventually turned over, okay, to become what we call white hackers today. Imagine if those people were not caught. Now, you can imagine the level of criminality in terms of cybercrime that America will be witnessing today. But some of the biggest hackers in the world today have been arrested. They've been jailed and probably released. And today, they work with security companies. They work as white hackers today to even help catch other cyber criminals. So I think it's that process, it's that system that makes everything work out eventually. Mm-hmm. Because you can't stop criminals from not committing crime. But then knowing that, okay, you would eventually get you one day, one way or the other, I think is what makes the whole difference.
Mm-hmm. If I heard you correctly, you said that when they catch some of these criminals, they use that very criminals to find other criminals. How ironic is that?
Yeah. So that's a very good point. And just to kind of address the questions directly, Paul, that you asked, why is it now that cybercrime is on the up? Why is it increasing? I think it's a number of factors. I think The first one is, as you know, technology in general is an evolving field, and things change all the time. And that means attackers are more and more finding ways to get into a corporate world. And usually in the past, whenever there is cyber crime, it usually is around, you know, a very intelligent kid from his mom's basement and trying to make a political statement or do something for fun. Right now, cybercrime is a way of living. It is a very big business for a lot of people. Criminal activities, you know, terrorist organizations, they use cybercrime for monetary gain or to hijack or to blackmail a corporate environment or even governments. And right now, a lot of people are working from home. And what that means is that what used to be protected by a government firewall and network or corporate network is not available because we are working from home, which means is that we're not protecting ourselves as much as we used to while we work from home. We don't have the necessary security appliances and devices and system put in place. We just simply use our laptops to log on into corporate environments. So that exposes us a lot. It is easier to attack a person to a corporate world through their home computers than in a corporate environment where you're protected by a number of firewalls and a number of security systems. So as such, it is on the up. And mind you, cybersecurity poll is a very young field. Only recently that a lot of countries started taking it seriously, and they started putting a lot of places, legal frameworks and systems in place. In the US, I think it was the early 2000s where they ended up having a separate branch of government that deals with specific cybercrime. So it's a young field, and it's also a mysterious field. A lot of people do not really understand. They understand the computer crime part, but they don't really understand how attacks are perpetrated, how the technology works behind the scenes. And as such, even people who are in IT field, in my own field, people who have years of experience working with systems, they still don't understand exactly how attacks work.
From what I gather from both of you, it looks like no matter what we do, we just have to stay alert. These threats are not going to go away. People are aggressively trying to break into systems. But who are these guys who hack into systems and, you know, get out with murder?
Well, they are just regular people like us, you and I, that just choose to do this. I think everybody has a choice to do the right thing or the wrong thing. In everything, we do have a choice. People have these skill sets. They have this capacity. But I think they chose to probably use it on the dark side, let me put it that way. And one of the key things is you can't really say this exactly who, because even some of the biggest hackers in the world, they are just regular people like you and I. Identify them by their digital footprints, because no matter how good you are, no matter how much you try to cover your steps, one way or the other, people still make mistakes. Like in everything, we are all still human. No matter how skilled you are, no matter how much intelligent you are, we would always still make some mistakes. So I think one way to identify them is via their digital footprints. And that's one of the ways by which agencies like the FBI and Interpol have always been able to identify some of those people. Just by some of their small digital footprints, we can identify who they are. And when we get them, put them through a legal process to probably get justice for whatever they have done, probably get punished or pay for whatever crimes they have committed.
Since the outbreak of the coronavirus, a lot of us have been working from home. And at home, we don't have these safeguards. We don't have securities where, you know, when you're on the internet, your network is secure as opposed to being at work. Right. Take, for example, when we're at work, every year or so, you do one of these exercises where you go through a training about cybersecurity.
Right.
But a lot of people at home using a personal computer don't have access to that. How does one overcome such an issue?
A lot of times I work with small businesses, small and medium scale businesses, and one of the key things a lot of them used to ask is, okay, so how bad can it get when it comes to cybersecurity? What are the options I have to protect myself? I think one of the first things I usually tell small businesses is you may not have the finances to probably procure some of the big solutions that some of these big companies have. But one of the things you can do for yourself is, since your business is online, you probably have e-commerce platforms and all that. One of the key things you can do is, at the point of implementing your online platform, always follow through with your developer or those in charge of developing your platform to have an idea of the security measures being put in place to safeguard you. And a lot of the times, when they put things in place, be at least have an idea of what and what is being put in place to protect you. As a business, you don't necessarily have to know the full technicalities of what it does, but at least so that when things go wrong, you have an idea of where to look and what to do, even before you call probably the security experts and all that. I'll give you a very good example. One of the key issues I have when it comes to small businesses is email phishing. Email phishing is probably one of the biggest challenges they have. Generally, their site might be secure. They might not have much information that attackers will steal on their platform. So if, for example, I'm running an e-commerce platform, for example, even if you hack my site and you probably want to steal information, you probably steal probably my contacts information for my customers and maybe their other details and all that. And these days, we have protocols in place to erase certain data after a certain time. So it's not before that. It's not like before where we store data indefinitely. These days, one of the security measures is, okay, after probably like 3 or 4 months, we wipe out certain data of certain orders and all that. Mm-hmm. So now, one of the things we try to explain to them is, particularly for the email phishing, is probably one of the easiest way to get to them, is try to hack into their emails. From their emails, they can enter their social media account, they can enter into their banking platform. So we try to explain to them what the risks are in terms of email phishing and what to look out for. How can I identify a fraudulent email? And what do you do when you see a fraudulent email? So those are some of the little things that one need to put in place, because we can't tell them all the whole technical things they need to understand. But the little we can tell them is that, okay, this is one of the biggest vulnerabilities you may have, which is your email. So one of the things you can do is, this is how to identify a fake email address. This is how to identify a vulnerable email address or a vulnerable email. And this is what and what you need to do to protect yourself from these things.
Right.
You want to weigh in too?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a good point, Adi. I think usually in my experience working with small or large businesses, security usually is an afterthought. Usually when you sit down with senior management, when you try and understand their business requirements and trying to implement an IT systems, they want functionality. We want it in such a way. They don't ask, how can we protect this?
Protect.
And it usually is a challenge when you try and explain that. We have, as security professionals, when we work with enterprise systems guys or infrastructure guys, there's always a log hate, make sure this is protected, make sure this is, done the right way. It doesn't happen. So it just tells you that the level of the security awareness as a small business owner up to a CEO of a corporate needs to improve significantly. User awareness, user training is one of the top priorities in terms of protecting networks. Whether you are a small business owner, you have an online presence, or you are a senior manager for a big corporate environment, you have to understand what security means. And you have to put a security systems in place, as well as procedures, and policies that protect your network. So first thing you do is, okay, so what am I dealing with? Am I protecting clients' database? Am I protecting clients' privacy? Am I, we call this PII or personal identifiable information here. It's extremely important for people to protect that. And as a company owner, you have a responsibility. That's the first thing. Second thing is you have to train your users. You have to train your staff consistently. Security threats are real. A lot of good companies that deal with security, they provide adequate training. Weekly, monthly, yearly, you have to go through a certain training and you get certified after that. Reason being is security, as I said earlier, is an evolving field. New threats always appear all the time. Investing in infrastructure like firewalls and antivirus and everything is an afterthought. First thing is first, training. Users have to know what they're dealing with. Don't put your personal password, you know, on a sticker on a computer screen, or don't divulge information to someone who pretends to call you from help desk. Uh-huh. These are very basic things that people need to understand. Once you have that level of awareness up to a standard, then you can start talking about investing in technologies, in investing in your firewalls, antivirus, and then make sure that you keep your systems up to date. Usually when, as a small business owner, when they you know, invest in computers, laptops, once they buy it, it sits there, it works, nothing happens. You have to consistently go online, update your system, make sure you download the latest patches, make sure you follow the security guidelines issued by the vendor. You keep yourself, you keep your systems up to date, because vulnerabilities are generally found on a system that's been unpatched, because a lot of people, a lot of attackers find vulnerabilities within an existing system.
How about for people who have no clue, who are computer illiterate, but they want to do a business online, or they have a computer, right. They know the basics of, they know how to open a Word document, they know how to type an email, but that's about it. How can people like that maybe protect themselves?
You have to train yourself. You have to keep yourself up to date with security. And you might not be a computer literate, but there are some basic training available online. If you go to YouTube and search for cybersecurity awareness, there are hundreds of companies that are issuing or providing some basic training on how to understand what cybersecurity is, the steps that you have to follow to make sure you keep yourself up to date and to make sure you protect your network. And this, as a business owner, just like you are putting a lot of effort in understanding your specialty, which is your business, you know, put a lot of effort in understanding the IT infrastructure that you're investing in.
I would just also say this, for business owners that are trying to move their business online or try to do business online, one of the key things you have to understand is, if you've developed yourself to a point of being able to use a computer, probably Microsoft Word and all that, then it shows that you have the skill also to learn basic cybersecurity systems. Sure. Because it takes a bit of skill for you to learn, for me to go from zero to being able to use Microsoft Word, open the computer, use Microsoft Word. So I think it's just the part of education, human capacity development, that is probably lacking. And I think we need to take that conversation back to, how do people start using the computer in the first place? Because these days we're having a lot of younger people that are probably starting with mobile devices, compared to probably people of our generation that probably started with the laptop or the desktop computer. So thank God we are bridging that gap already with the older and the younger generation. But then we still need to take that education to them as quickly as possible for them to understand how best to protect themselves online, even as they grow older, so that all this will be part of what they grow up with as they grow older.
Speaking about younger people, why is this cybercrime a very attractive venture for young people?
I think Hollywood has a role to play here, mainly. If you look at most of the, you know, cool videos and cool films that come out, you see an attacker or a hacker kind of sitting somewhere in the corner of the room and doing all these fancy codes and to get into a corporate environment and to kind of brag about it. Look, this is how intelligent I am. I think the vast majority of it is people are generally interested in IT, and young people, you know, from using gadgets all the way to computer systems, they are extremely affluent. They know what they're doing. And that just shows you that there is a huge amount of interest in IT to begin with. And cybersecurity is, as I said, you know, it's a very highly specialized field that deals with security. And in general, when you look at these films, it shows you that how attractive it is to become an intelligent guy that breaks into a very protected network environment. And as such, young people are driven towards it. You know, you want to be able to have the intelligence level or the awareness level to be able to get into in and out of corporate networks. But I think what should come next to that is, you know, you don't have to be the bad guy in that movie. You can also be the good guy. Good guys that protect networks also have equal set of skills, but they're using that for, you know, good purposes as opposed to evil purposes. I'm pretty sure you've heard about, you know, black hat hackers or are white hat hackers, and those are the kind of people. White hat hackers are generally do the same thing as attackers, but they do that to expose vulnerabilities in network environments, and they're usually paid to do that. So your skill is very important, but not necessarily to the bad thing. But at the same time, just understand, you know, security is a very serious field. It's very cool, and it's extremely hard to learn, because most of the things that I've learned personally, even though I went to, you know, college and university and all that to get degrees, most of the things that I've learned through experience, you know, working in this field. And that gives you a huge amount of confidence to be able to deal with things like that. So learn, you know, have some interest. Young people have a lot of interest in games, and develop that into an IT field that can, you can convert into a career going forward. And IT security is a very, very cool field.
Interesting.
Okay. I think from my, I would say from my own side of things, a lot of young people, particularly, like we say in Africa, we have more of them coming into the this space, largely because of the economic outlook. Like Tom said, there are a lot of people that are interested in IT, but then they do not know what to do with it really. They don't have the right mentorship on, okay, I have this skill, what can I do with this skill? Now, people see more of cybercrime succeeding than they see a regular IT guy succeeding. Okay, so I think we need to get to that point where we need to help young people see the economic value, the positive economic value of these skills they have, and how they can access and help themselves with it rather than going into crimes with it.
What are some of the major crimes committed on the internet?
The number one crime on the latest information is the ransomware crime that happened starting from 2013, still continuing until today. So this is a virus that spreads into a corporate world. And usually an email is sent out to you as a user and you click on it, not knowing what the content is. And email looks very legitimate, that it comes from your colleague or someone that works in your environment. And you click on it and it automatically downloads a code or a virus into your laptop. Then it starts scanning your network, looks at files, very important files on a server or somewhere in the environment, and starts locking those files using an encryption key. Once it completely locks your entire file and the corporate file, it will send out an email. This is all done by a single virus. It will send out an email to whoever it identifies as key people. And if you want this file to be unlocked, we have the encryption key. And here is a link. Click on this and pay certain amount of money through Bitcoin.
Like you said, cybercrime has increased a lot because more people work from home these days. And we were witnessing more and more financial crime based on this, and there were also a large amount of misinformation. Like Tom rightly said, there is a whole lot of misinformation going on right now, particularly during the pandemic. I mean, you would be shocked that some of the suggestions or some of the assertions a lot of people hold on to when it comes to things like this. And you ask yourself, how do people think about things like this? It's just to tell you the power of misinformation, how powerful misinformation can be. You understand? So even to the point of, I remember that the early stages of the coronavirus, we had this whole global issue about 5G and the coronavirus, and we have people across the world burning down telecom masts just because of this misinformation. And it went on and on and on like that, that even some telecoms officials or some telecoms engineers were even attacked and almost killed in certain places. So it was that bad. So I think the one of the biggest danger is this angle from the misinformation angle, because it's strong enough to lead to a civil unrest. And if care is not taken and is not properly looked into or taken care of as quickly as possible, I mean, it could take things out of proportion. So I think these are probably, for me, these are probably the two big areas that I hope that we can look into and try to resolve in the coming months or years.
That's a very good point. Misinformation. You saw what happened here in the United States in January. A lot of people, it has become mainstream media. When you think about it, a lot of people go to some of these sites where they get misinformed, and they take that as the gospel truth. You saw people who are fed on this misinformation attack the U.S. Capitol.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think back in the days, Paul, you know, media companies were limited. And to be able to create a media company, you know, you need millions of dollars, both in Africa, here, wherever. Social media have created an opportunity for people to create their own media platform.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome, Paul. Thank you
for having us.
That's our show. Thanks for watching. I hope to see you next week. For now, so long from Washington.